Hey, everyone. Welcome to Podcast Insider. My name is Todd Cochran. Of course, I'm joined by my co-host, Mr. Mike Dell. And this is our first show after Thanksgiving. Mike, how you doing?
About 10 pounds heavier, I think.
I'm doing good. I'm like 2 pounds down. So I guess I didn't eat very much.
I definitely overdid it. And then, you know, all the leftovers afterwards, since it was a much smaller affair this year. So,
yeah, well. My sister's kids, they had just inhaled like the largest turkey ever. So there was, usually we get turkey burgers, but nothing this year. So those of you that don't know what a turkey burger is, you take your leftover turkey, you take your leftover stuffing, you take some cranberry, you take some mashed potatoes and gravy, and then you grind it all together. And it sounds, ugh.
It's like hash.
But you take toasted bread and you take Miracle Whip, not mayonnaise, Miracle Whip, and put that on, and then put that mixture.
Oh. We're going to start an argument with that Miracle Whip stuff.
Well, you know, Miracle Whip is not mayonnaise. So those of you that like mayonnaise can put mayonnaise on. I'm not a fan of mayonnaise. But anyway, welcome everyone. We've got some news and some best practices. Mike's going to do a demo today, so we'll see how that goes. Yeah. And then got some stuff to talk about blueberry. We've got an interview with Elisa Birnbaum from the In the Business of Change podcast, and we got a question of the week. Apple Podcast Connect will require two-factor authentication starting in February 2021. So that's something new. Mike, I haven't logged into Apple Podcast in probably more than a year.
Yeah, it's funny. They've been requiring that, or not requiring that. They've been highly suggesting that for a while. And what's fun, you know, when I'm doing screen shares with clients and we're submitting to Apple, they log in and it's, you know, say, oh, we need your two-factor code. Well, if they're on a Mac, that code pops right up in the same browser. And I'm like, oh, how's that two-factor? Yeah. You're on the same device.
Right. It is kind of funny. And if you have multiple devices, that code pops up everywhere.
Right. But hey, so, you know, they're requiring it. So sometime between now and first part of February, you might want to go log in and get that two-factor set up. It's not onerous. It's pretty easy.
Right. So this next story, oh my goodness, I would not want to be this employee, or maybe soon not to be employee. But according to a article over on digitalmusicnews.com, a Spotify employee has apparently removed a Joe Rogan episode without permission.
Yeah, that's what the report is. And of course, they told Joe it was a caching issue.
Uh-huh.
And then later on, it came out possibly somebody that didn't agree with the guest removed that episode.
Yeah. So you just wonder here now with that kind of activity going on. You know, here's the thing, folks. Again, the blueberry way. Right. You have your own website. You have your own .com. Control your own RSS feed. Control your own syndication. Guess what? No one. Well, we can't say no one because this was done from within the platform.
Right.
But that's just crazy that someone removed an episode. Now, Spotify takes episodes and shows down all the time, but this seems pretty nefarious. But we'll see if that individual has a job when they get done doing their investigation.
It says in the article, so far they haven't been punished.
Huh.
But who knows what's happened since then. This came out a couple of days ago. But Rogan, as of the first of this month, is exclusive to Spotify. His public RSS feed only has one episode in it now that he did, I guess, last Friday or something. And then the Spotify version of it now has all the old back episodes. And the first episode he was exclusive. And of course, I heard you guys yesterday talking about that app that somebody made.
Well, someone made a parser.
Yeah.
Over at Spotty, S-P-O-T-I, feed.timdorr.com. So if you know matter of fact, the example they give is Joe Rogan.
Right.
So they've basically, if you know your link on Spotify to your show, you can create an RSS feed through this tool. Now, Mike, you and I both know probably a cease and desist letter is coming to that website at some point. But anyway, if you want to listen to Joe Rogan via podcast app, it's Spotty, S-P-O-T-I, feed.timdorr.com.
Right. I went ahead and subscribed in Overcast just to see how long it's going to last.
See how long it stays up online. Right. Don't have to log into Spotify to get it either. So that's the cool thing. So I can't imagine them not being aggressive. But here's the thing. That guy put all that code on a GitHub. So if you know, it's going to be whack-a-mole. So someone's going to take one site down and someone will put up another.
Yeah.
Cat's out of the bag on that one. So what's a strand survey?
Yeah, there's a survey that was done. I forget who did it. Doesn't say in the article. Oh, Team Whistle did a survey and says that a lot of the millennial and Gen Z people are replacing their TV watching with a lot of podcast listening.
Do people really watch TV anymore? What does that include? Does that mean that they're not watching YouTube and...
Well, I don't know about YouTube. I didn't really specify what on TV that they're watching, but a lot of people are using audio because they're doing other things while, you know, just like the use case for podcasting in general, but they're saying that 13 to 34-year-old demographic there is really taking to podcasting more so than they have been, and
awesome.
Definitely rejecting television as much, you know, as they have in the past. So, yeah, I don't know. Like I said, it doesn't specify whether, you know, it's talking about Netflix or any of that kind of stuff.
Right, right.
But I know broadcast TV's in kind of a bad way just because of, you know, most people are watching a lot of Netflix and other things.
You know, what's even interesting is since really the majority of the stuff I'm watching now, when I do have time to have anything on the TV, I'm watching YouTube stuff and YouTube series.
Yeah, I watch a lot of those too. You know, that and my wife just watches Netflix. So, you know, she barely watches any broadcast television. Yeah. So
it's kind of funny because I could almost cancel Netflix at this point. I've watched one movie on Netflix in the past 6 months. So maybe I ought to check it out. Maybe there's a bunch of new stuff over there. But anyway, that's what I've been doing. Q Code has hired longtime former Apple Podcast executive Steve Wilson. Steve's been at Apple Podcasts forever.
Yeah, I think he left a couple of years ago and went to another company and then now landed at Q Code.
I thought he was still with Apple for a while, but maybe I'm wrong.
Yeah, he's going to be the chief strategy officer over there.
Yeah.
So very good. Congratulations, Steve.
Yeah, for picking that up. So it's less than 2 weeks left to submit your show to the AMBYs. The deadline is December 15th. The AMBYs is the award system for the Podcast Academy. So it's podcastacademy.awardsengine.com. Boy, they could have bought my awards engine.
Yeah,
but
they could.
podcastacademy.awardsengine.com is right now. If you are a Podcast Academy member, which we fully endorse, I think the entry fee is $100 to enter your show. If you are a non-member, it's $150. So current cost to join the Podcast Academy is $100 a month. So hopefully...
A year.
Yeah, $100 for a year, sorry. So I hope that you've gotten involved already in the Podcast Academy and signed up. Might be a way to kill two birds with one stone, sign up for the Academy. And you know, you're going to cost you $50 more than what it was in the early registration period, but yeah, thepodcastacademy.com is where you go find the Podcast Academy stuff. So anyway, 2 weeks left to submit your show to the AMBYs. I'm actually starting to get used to saying that. It was kind of weird to say it at the beginning.
Yeah, I kind of liked what their original thought of the awards were going to be called, the Golden Mics or something like that. But I guess the AMBYs, you know, it's similar to the Oscars or the Emmys or whatever. So that's what they're going for.
The Golden Mic was basically trademarked already. It was something someone else was already using, so they couldn't use the Golden Mic.
I wonder if that was Rush Limbaugh, because I know he calls his microphone the Golden EIB mic.
Yeah, it's not him, but there's somebody who does a true award. So
okay.
Yeah, it was a true conflict. But lots of consolidation continuing the space where Amazon may, the keyword is may, and it's complete rumor control by one for $300 million.
I've just seen it reported in a lot of places in Gadgets, the one I linked to in the show notes there. But yeah, they're looking at maybe buying Wondery and they're figuring about $300 million. So
you see these companies are big companies are spending big money right now. So it's pretty amazing out there how much cash is being sent for content houses and for podcasters, for indie podcasters. What's really going to happen here, I think, over the next couple of years is they're going to be looking to sign content. All these places are spending all this money and they're going to be looking to bring talent on. So who knows? You'll be able to play around. So Mike, you've got a best practice for us on how to choose the right microphone for you. People are probably wondering if they're watching why you have a microphone and a headset on today.
Yeah, with a microphone on it.
Yeah.
Well, last week somebody asked what microphone I was using. I couldn't remember. So I figured, you know, a lot of people ask about microphones, and a lot of people like to, you know that they're getting the best one for them. And that's the hard part. For a long time, you were using a condenser, and that worked really well for you. And then you switched to that SM7B. Myself, I started out on an old MXL condenser, and
it
was a pain in the butt because it would pick up everything.
Yeah, it was a pretty sensitive mic, but it was great. I used it for like 3 years.
Yeah, they're great. But, you know, I've got three different mics set up here, and I kind of want to do a little bit of a demo just to give you an idea. You know, one of the items in my best practice there is expensive versus cheaper. Well, the mic I'm talking into right now is a, what is that? See, I'm losing it again. No, it's a, I do know. It's an Electro Voice RE20, and those go for about $400, something like that, $450, I think.
Yeah, I've got one, but haven't used it in years. Electro Voice RE20 is one you're speaking into now, huh?
Yeah, just about every radio station you walk into will either have the mic I'm on or the mic you're on in the broadcast studio.
I've got the Shure SM7B.
Yeah. But these are, you know, $400, $450 microphones. And you can have decent sound with a lot cheaper microphones. So let me demo here. So the first one here, it's probably a little bit crisper only because it doesn't have as much bass. But this is the built-in headset mic on the Audio-Technica BPH-S1, which goes for about $200. And, you know, it's a great mic, especially if you move around a lot, because you don't have to be on mic because the mic is set right in front of your face. And, you know, it's a decent enough microphone that, you know, you can use it just in the studio, or you guys for Tech Podcast Network used to use these on stage at a conference, at CES conference. And, you know, they're great at background noise, doesn't hit them as much. They're just great. You know, and you see like sportscasters and sideline reporters and stuff using microphones very similar to this.
And for those of you that can't see Mike, Mike is wearing a headphone with a mic attached to it. So that's what he's talking about here is, again, the Audio-Technica BPH-S1 headset mic. Now, I have five or six of those.
Right. Yeah, they're great.
The only thing you have to watch out for on those mics is you can get too close to them and it picks up too much stuff. Or when you're, and Mike, just move the mic up and down just a little bit and I'll be quiet.
Yeah, you can definitely tell if you're off mic, you know.
But you can also hear it when you move it, it'll crinkle.
Yeah, it's a little creak, you know, there you can hear it. But
yeah, so be careful. If you use one of those, leave the mic. Don't touch it.
Set it and forget it.
Set it and forget it. So what's next?
All right, the next one I have here. There, let me get that in front of my face. This is a handheld microphone. This one happens to be a Sennheiser E835, but it's very similar to an SM58 or a Audio-Technica 2100. It's a handheld vocal microphone like you'd see, you know, rock stars on stage using, that kind of thing. But these are about $100, a little bit more, a little bit less, depending on which brand you get, but they're all very similar. The thing with these is this one's handheld. I do have a mount for it, but handling noise, this is pretty good at not getting a lot of handling noise. And the more expensive you go, you can get these. I think there's a Behringer version of this that's probably, you know, $20, but you're going to hear every move. This one's a little better.
You know, a lot of people are using mic stands with those.
Yep. And I have one right here. If you're right on video, I've got a, you know, table mic stand for it, and you could put it on a boom just like the big broadcast mic I have.
But you know, it's real subjective. If you listen to this mic that you're on now and then flip to the RE20, the delta is really not that big. So
yeah, this is the RE20 and this is the Sennheiser. So they're not super different.
Yeah, not super different. And it's $300 cheaper.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the thing, you know, when we're talking about microphones, you have a microphone that sounds decent. A lot of us indie podcasters are gearheads. So, you know, that's the main reason we get these fancy microphones. But it's not that this microphone that I'm talking on now, the RE20, is $300 better sounding.
Yeah.
Than that Sennheiser, but it's pretty decent. But in here, we also talk about dynamic versus condenser. You know, dynamics are definitely better for noise rejection. A condenser has a more full sound. So if you're in a...
I love my condenser mics, but for some reason, I've gotten on a dynamic mic kick here recently.
Yeah, and it's different mic techniques too. So you just have to experiment with that. Some examples of dynamics, of course, the ones I showed you, the new MV7, which is a really nice microphone. So I've been told. ATRs, all those are dynamics. And just, you know, look at the mic specs when you're looking at microphones and it'll say whether it's a dynamic. It may not say if it's a condenser, but if it doesn't say dynamic, it's probably a condenser.
So one thing that I do want to say here, though, is that podcasters do not let podcasters buy Snowballs or Yetis.
Right, exactly.
Please, please, please. If you ever hear a podcaster, what mic should I get? Don't encourage a Yeti. Now, a Yeti is okay if you know how to use it.
It's an awesome microphone, but it's very particular about your environment and very particular about your technique. I mean, I know people that use them and they sound awesome.
Yeah.
But it's a learning curve to get it right.
Yep. So be careful out there on if you're giving recommendations. I really think that ATR 2100 is the, hopefully everyone is primarily recommending right now because it's a good mic, good price. The one that you just demoed is a good mic, good price. The Heil PR40, you know, here's the thing about like the dynamic mic, like a Heil PR40. My voice really doesn't do well on a PR40. So if you're thinking about spending this extra cash, you know, and if you have a Guitar Center or someplace like that around where they have a bank of mics that you can test, I always recommend to go in and try and just listen to yourself on that mic without any processing and see how it sounds to you.
Yeah, all the ones that I just tested are all processed. So, you know, you're not getting the full thing. I'll do a mic demo on Podcast Help Desk coming up soon, and I'll do it unprocessed so you can hear the real difference.
So again, does your voice sound good on the mic you choose? And for me, the PR40, while it's a fantastic mic, did not.
Right.
Now, the PR30, I sound good on the PR30. I feel I sound good on the PR30. So I'm not sure. Just a little different mic, a little different condenser, you know,
capsule.
And of course, it's your environment too. So if you have a little bit of a noisy environment, then of course, you know, want to maybe stick with a dynamic mic. Not very many podcasters can pull off a condenser.
Yeah,
I ran a condenser for 13 years.
Right.
But I also knew that I had to be so far away from my monitor because if I spoke through the condenser and I got bounced back off the monitor from my voice, it would cause a little bit of an effect. And people are like, you really, your voice is bouncing off the monitor in front of you? Yeah, it does. And when you have a big fat monitor in front of you where you're doing your show, that can be affected. Dynamics are not affected by that as much.
Not as much. It still is. I mean, I'm probably a little close to my monitor, even for this mic, but I'd have to blow it up really big if I moved it back.
People get mad at me because I get so close to the SM7B, but it's hard to untrain myself because I've been used to being right up on top of my condenser too. So you just have to learn that you don't have to be right up on the mic. You can be back a little bit and still get great recordings. Any other thoughts, Mike?
Yeah, well, two things. USB versus XLR. A lot of these mics are XLR only. So if you're going to plug it in USB, you got to get a separate little interface or a mixer. You know, in this case, I'm using the Rodecaster Pro. But, you know, they make simpler interfaces for just a single mic. But some of these are USB built in. The ATR 2100, that new MV7, those both have USB. One disadvantage with USB is you can only have one microphone on the computer.
Yeah. Some people have found workarounds, but you got to be pretty geeky to do that.
It's real geeky and not stable enough that I would trust it in production.
Another thing, too, is if you're going to buy a Shure SM7B, these take a lot of gain.
Yeah.
You're not going to get away with having a Behringer or a $99 mixer. It's just not going to work with an SM7B.
Not without help.
But yeah, not without some inline boost, which are available. When I built my studio, I kind of went a little crazy and I bought a real nice preamplifier for my mic. So I have really no excuse. I should have the best sounding sound in the space. But
well, the other thing is, you know, as long as your audio is not painful to listen to. Most people forgive you on it. You know, just make it sound clean, and it doesn't have to be, you know, super duper quality, because most people are listening on crappy earbuds or through Bluetooth or something like that. So this is more for the gearheads.
And here's something cool about Amazon. You get a mic, you don't like it, and you send it back.
Yeah, good way to test them.
Good way to test. All right, let's move on here. Talk a little bit about a little blueberry news. So is the Instagram contest still going on?
Yep, until tomorrow, actually. Oh. So you got a little time. We're giving away an ATR2100X USB and XLR microphone. So we'll have a link to the Instagram post. You go over there and like it and tag three friends in it, and you may win a microphone from us.
Awesome. PowerPress 8.4.5 is out. Some minor bug fixes. We continue to tackle little things that we're finding.
Yeah, like I said, it's not a big deal. We had one bug where certain people were having a hard time logging in, linking their account, and Ben got that all fixed up. Plus, we reordered the destinations tab a little bit. So nothing big.
We've got a blog post out, Internet Security and Podcasting. You know, we're getting into the point where we're at the end of the year, and it's always good to kind of think about the security of your computers and your accounts and all that stuff. So we've got a good article on internet security and podcasting that you should check out. Next up, we've got an interview that I did this week with Elisa Birnbaum in the business of change. Elisa is out of Toronto, Canada. She's been podcasting a couple of years. Well, I'm talking about the same stuff I'm going to talk about in the interview. So we'll just go ahead and kick that over. But her show is over at seachangemagazine.com. And again, the title of the show is In the Business of Change. We'll be back after that interview. Hello, everyone. I want to welcome Elisa Birnbaum to Podcast Insider. Elisa's from Toronto, snowy, cold Toronto, I think, because it's snowy cold here in Michigan. And she does the In the Business of Change podcast. She's been podcasting for about 2 years, but has been involved in the media space for over 10 with a magazine, and has about, well, a little over 50 episodes, as near as we could figure. So, Elisa, welcome to Podcast Insider.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So, you know, I think your story is going to be unique because from what I've gathered just in our, you know, quick discussion before we started the interview is that you decided to do a podcast in extension to what you're doing with your magazine. So maybe you can talk a little bit about both of those things. Why did you decide to do a podcast, and basically, you know, the why, the genesis story of your show?
Sure. So just to take a step back, as you just mentioned, I did have a magazine. I do have a magazine called Sea Change Magazine. And that's been around for over 10 years now. We decided to tell stories about a field called social entrepreneurship, which is basically businesses are used for social impact, for social change. And we cover stories from all over the world that we're based in Canada. A big chunk of our profiles and feature stories and stuff like that are based in Canada, but we've also expanded quite a bit with contributors and profiles from across the globe. And so the reason the podcast came about in sort of two-part, one of them, it just seemed to be a logical next step for the magazine. Telling stories in different mediums, people seem to be interested not only in reading the articles, but listening to stories of conversations with social entrepreneurs. So it seemed like a logical extension. And it actually came about the same time that I published a book on social entrepreneurs around the world called In the Business of Change. And so I decided to launch the podcast with interviews with the folks that I interviewed for the book as the start of the podcast. So that were the first bunch of podcasts were individuals. I interviewed about 70 individuals for my book. And so they became a good centering point for that podcast. And now we've just continued on for 2 years interviewing all kinds of social entrepreneurs and what we call change makers in the world.
You know, what's unique about your situation in doing your show is most podcasters start doing content first, do interviews, and then understand, oh, I got a book. And then they do a book. So you actually did the book the traditional way. Yes. And, you know, went through that whole process and interviews and drafts and everything. And then you said, aha, from all the stories I've got, there's a podcast here. So I think that's unique. And I think you're the first person I run into that did it that way. So it's kind of cool. You know, yeah. When I wrote my book on podcasting back in 2005, I used the podcast as a promotion vehicle, obviously, for the book. And we did very, very well with it. So have you been able then through your podcast to actually drive more book sales too? Because maybe they want to read the more intimate details that's covered in the book.
Yes. Yes, definitely has been. It's been interesting. I mean, it's gotten more interest in the magazine, and it's also got more interest in my book. And my publishers were definitely very excited about the prospect of enhancing our marketing for the book through the podcast. So all in all, it has been a very positive experience in that way. And it continues to be, even though the book is a couple years old now, I still do get people interested in coming to the book through the podcast and vice versa. So it's been an interesting ride so far. Yeah. And also the book has recently been made into an audiobook. So I'm able to, and that's a more recent type of development. So for people who, you know, can maintain that audio element and that's the way they like to learn, it adds another form for them to learn more.
So where do you think the story got told best? Do you think it got told best on the podcast or did it get told best in the book?
You know, I think the book allows for a lot more in-depth. If you're looking for an in-depth exploration of the social enterprise, social entrepreneur, their backstory, the challenges, then the book definitely offers that. I think it really depends. If you're just looking for sort of a 20-minute understanding of what, you know, a social enterprise, you're sort of want to be just have an inspired tidbit for your day, which is basically what we say. We're storytelling for social good. We give people inspirational stories. So then, you know, it's not black or white. It's not this or that. I think it's really the type of stories you're looking for. And if some people I have seen, they would come to the podcast and enjoy an interview and say, okay, now I'm going to read the book to learn more about this particular individual or other individuals that might have a similar storyline. So it kind of works both ways.
Just as a kind of a funny, I guess, note, when the podcasting space was very early, anyone that tried to make money off their podcast was kind of really frowned upon because you're supposed to be doing it for the art and for the freedom and being able to do the expression. And if you're taking money, you are all commercialized. So when I announced that I had gotten paid, because I actually got a 5-figure advance for the book I did on podcasting, I lost half my audience because they sold out.
Oh my gosh.
So how times have changed. So
seriously,
yeah.
I would love to get paid.
So for podcasters that are listening to this and you're thinking about doing a book, you know, I think that there is, through what you're doing in your shows, there's ample material there to go back and say, okay, is this a half a chapter, a quarter chapter? You know, what do I need to do to get to 250 pages or whatever the word count you want to be? So for those of you who've never considered writing a book, I think it's a good to do at least one because it builds your authority in the space that you're representing in your show. So
absolutely. No, yeah. I'm all about monetization and supporting yourself. And, you know, when I got a publisher to agree to this book and to give me an advance, I mean, you jump up and down quite a few times. So nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, it's all nothing good. Nothing wrong with it all. And a lot of people self-publish and, you know, that's okay too.
That's great too.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah.
But I always tell people you're going to self-publish, make sure you have a good copy editor. You know,
yes. Oh my God.
Anyway, we're getting off topic here.
Priceless. So, yes.
So your show then, let's talk a little bit about how's your audience reacting? What kind of feedback are you getting? What are they asking for? Does it drive more interviews? How's that going?
Yeah. So, I mean, it's been very positive. The show itself, I mean, I produce it myself. So I always tell people that, you know, don't expect the top flashy kind of production values. It's not going to happen. We're on a tight budget. So that's what we do. But still, it's what's interesting to me is that I haven't found people, you know, make a lot of comments about the fact that it's not the top quality production. People are looking for sort of that casual conversations and they kind of enjoy it. I thank goodness these days, I think it's been more accepted and people sort of like that, you know, that's not perfect.
Right.
And so I have been getting a lot of feedback in terms of that. Like, we just love the conversation. We like the fact that you're a good interviewer and you're able to keep the conversation flowing. So that type of stuff is good. And I always look for, you know, even beyond the book, of course, the interviews from the book, is that for a long time now, I've just been doing interviews around the world, but with topics that would be of interest to my readership at the magazine, obviously. And so, yeah, people are responding very positively saying, You know, this gives them an added element, an added layer of understanding for certain social entrepreneurs. And it's been very positive. And it's actually seemed to have, like I said before, sort of like the readership of the magazine is leading to people listening to the podcast, and the people just coming to me from the podcast are now going on subscribing to the magazine. So altogether positive. I have nothing negative to say about the experience. It definitely adds more work to my day, but it's been worth it. So yeah.
But if you think about it, you're really closing the loop. You're doing the magazine, you're doing the podcast, you've got the book. So they all kind of feed each other, and all ships rise together, I guess, in this case. And I think that's important for people that are thinking about, you know, they're building their show, building their brand, all these little existential things that you do continues to help. And I've got a weird saying, and probably people have listened to the show a few times have heard it, but my goal is to drive my listeners back to Moonbase Alpha. Moonbase Alpha is my website. And for you, it might be, the goal might be to drive people to sign up for a magazine subscription, or it might be, as you said, to sell more books or getting more exposure. So I think that there's always a variety of goals that can be accomplished by adding more media types. Let's say if you're just a podcaster, you better add some additional things to be more, I guess, for what, in other words, just to build more authority, build more exposure and all that.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So how's this changed you doing the show? What are you getting out of this?
I'm loving it. You know, I've been a journalist for many, many years. And so the magazine's only 10 years old, but I've been writing and doing this type of stuff for 20. So obviously this is a passion project of mine. This is an area of interest to me that has grown out of my general love for telling stories. But it's given me a platform from which I can reach out to people that, you know, may not have known who I am otherwise, may not have been interested otherwise, but I can say, look, you know, this is what I've been doing. I've been doing this for 10 years, this magazine, and now I have this podcast. People are saying, yes, love to talk to you. So it's the opportunity for me to speak with fascinating people that are really inspirational, that I look up to and admire. And so personally, professionally, it's been wonderful. It's been very fulfilling. And so I enjoy it very, very much. And I just enjoy the medium a lot. I love speaking to people and I love interviewing people. So this is just a wonderful way to do all that I enjoy doing.
Well, you know, we're pretty lucky this show here at Blueberry, we get our Blueberry Pro team to post-produce the show. And that has, you know, it, from a quality standpoint, it's driven the quality of the show up considerably. But on the opposite token, the two other shows that I do, I don't do any post-production. It's almost like hit record, hit stop, do a little editing, a minor, like leveling, and we put it out in the street as that. And for me, that works really, really well. And at the same time, like you had said, budget. And I'm not applying budget to my personal show to have it edited. Number two, it's raw. And at the same time, I think that for podcasters, they get really wrapped around the audio quality piece. Yeah, the audio, we want good, clean audio. But at the same time, we want to make sure that we're actually accomplishing the goal of the show to tell stories and keep people engaged. I think people often overlook a but or hmm or you know, whatever it may be, if you are providing good content. So,
agreed.
And do you do much editing? Do you take any time at all and go through and edit the show at all?
I do, but probably, like, no. I mean, not to the extent that a professional editor would. I use a free editing tool that I taught myself how to use. And so, you know, I will tighten up some things here and there. I think when I first started 2 years ago, I was much more concerned about, oh, no, I'm saying ah a lot, or I'm saying like a lot, and I would, you know, take them all out. And then the more I listen to other podcasts and exactly what you're saying, like, sometimes people are, they don't care as much. The raw stuff and the honest conversations, and the more honest that you are and the more just casual sometimes and informal that you are, I think some people are really just a lot more eager to listen to it and to enjoy the transparency of it all. So I don't think it's as much of a problem or a challenge that it might have been like 5 years ago or something like that, or even when I started. So yeah, I will tighten up some things a little bit here and there. Yes, I do the intro and the outro after I do it. So I produce that afterwards so I don't have to get caught up in that while I have the conversation going. But aside from that, now it's pretty raw.
Yeah, I think just like this interview is pretty raw. And I, you know, we just jump into it, we go, it is what it is. And hopefully it's a success from a content standpoint. And, you know, you don't win them all. And it often depends a lot on the guests that we have. But I think if you do a little bit of preparation, which I do very little, you'll be able to drag those types of questions out. So doing this as a business, so you're doing this as part of the regular day job. What did you have to do to sell this to the team? You know, to execute, you know, you're going to have to put so many hours a week into this. How hard was this of a sell, or wasn't it a hard sell at all?
It wasn't a hard sell. It really did feel like a logical way to go strategically. And it just, you know, I'm doing a lot of work myself. So it's not like we're putting a huge investment into a production company to help us with it. I mean, I'd love to be able to do that sometimes. But, you know, it's a much easier sell when it's the work that you're taking on whatever time you can find. And so, and also, you know, I'm not doing it. And this is, you know, this is an important point, is that I'm not doing it every week. Like some people, you know, I know a lot of people are doing a few a week or every week, and it's probably what you should be doing, but I'm not. So it's a compromise, and we're doing what we can, and we're happy with it. So, you know, so far so good. And that's the way I sort of look at it, and how you just always have to weigh the investment versus, you know, the time and money.
Yep.
So for us, it's worth it.
And I'm at a point now personally where I'm doing 4 episodes a week for 3 different shows. And it's a lot. Yeah. So, you know, there's also the viability of keeping the energy up. You know, as an example, I shouldn't admit this, but, you know, I had a rough night last night. I didn't sleep well. So I came in to work this morning, like, oh my God, I'm tired. I'm going to have to do an interview. So, you know, getting ready to do the interview, you know, do a few jumping jacks and get up and ready. But at the same point, I'm probably going to tell my producer from my other show, I said, hey, we're not going to do a show tonight, because by the time I get ready to do that at 8 tonight, I'm just not going to have the energy. So I think a lot of times people will put a show out just because they feel so obligated to do so, when maybe they should take the day off and not do the show. So there's something said about being weekly, but at the same point, it's being able to be mentally ready to do an interview or to be ready to produce a show.
I agree. I think it's so important. And I think burnout is more important now than ever before. So I think you have to be just very mindful of self-care and taking care of yourself, you know. And for us also, I mean, I should add that we're putting out content in the magazine itself. So if I'm not pushing a podcast that week, I'm pushing other content. So thank goodness for wonderful contributors that are helping with that. So it's a little bit of a different strategy for us, thankfully. But, you know, yeah, I think you have to really weigh sort of your health with a bunch of other things.
Yeah. You know. And you're lucky enough to be able to do it from work, where most people are working and then going home and doing a show.
Yeah.
And trying to balance life, family, partners, whatever it may be. So we understand here very, very well from a company aspect that sometimes podcasters just can't, you know, they're trying to produce shows every week or every other week, and sometimes life gets in the way. But I think that's the beauty of podcasting too, because I often tell my audience, maybe sometimes in post, why I didn't do a show or why I'm not going to do a show. And they're pretty forgiving. And they have, you know, we always tell podcasters, if you're brand new, don't take a break. The first 2 years, we try to keep them on schedule to build their shows. Right. But at the same time, life is just life. And because with everything going on with COVID this year, it's flipped everything on its head completely here. So interesting. So how do you feel your show growth has been then?
I've seen it grow pretty nicely, actually. I wasn't anticipating. I have very modest expectations for a lot of things that I do, just because I don't want to, you know, get too overeager about things. And I know that there's so many podcasts out there, and I know there's so many magazines out there, there's so much content out there. I mean, so everything is competitive, and it's just important to keep your expectations very honest and modest. And so with that being said, it's been a very positive experience. I've seen it grow nicely. It's not like a huge jump. And I can obviously, you can watch and see the different issues, people that are more interesting to be on a podcast. So you learn from it. So I see, okay, that one did a little better. This one did you know, overall, we're seeing a positive progression, but there's also been, of course, some ups and downs, a little bit more interesting interview, a little bit less interview. And that's great to learn. Learning lessons are important to know who to bring on for the next one, but overall very, very positive. So yeah, it's been good.
So this is a little off the beaten path of the show, but what are you hearing then from people that you're interviewing on how business and how things are changing in the last year or so? And do you talk about actual, when I'm talking about social, are you talking about social media, or are you talking about social, just pure fabric social change in society?
We're talking about social change, like different ways, different businesses and different approaches to it, and people that are doing a lot in their work to affect social change. So that's our focus.
Yep.
So if you're asking, you know, how are they doing in this COVID time? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. So how are they, how is this affecting that goal?
A lot of these people rely on donations or people willing to spend extra money to support them. And all of that stuff has taken a hit this year for sure. So a lot of companies or entrepreneurs that I speak to who are working in the area of social change have had to pivot a lot of their businesses in order to keep them going. Some of them had to stop. Some of them had to close. But others, you know, that have just kept pushing on have just taken a big hit. So, and some of them, like I said, pivoting. So some of them that used to be producing a certain product in order to affect, say, change and help the homeless, whatever. Now they're producing other stuff that is more practical and people will still spend money on so that they can support their work, that kind of thing. It's been hard. It's been really hard.
Yeah, I saw something earlier today where 1/3 of businesses in New Jersey have closed. And you think about, and that's a variety of businesses. That's maybe not businesses that are focused on social change, but, you know, the whole gambit. It's pretty devastating. You think about that going across the entire world. So I think going into 2021, we're going to be looking at a totally different landscape of,
absolutely,
of how things are. But anyway, so in the business of change, what's the website? How can they find the show?
Well, you can find the show actually at our easiest way is just to go to our magazine, Sea Change Magazine, SEE Change Magazine, oneword.com. And the podcast, there's a link to it right there. Or you can go to iTunes. That's basically where we are featured. If you look up In the Business of Change there, that's where we're focused mostly, iTunes. So one or the other, you can find us.
That's right. Well, thank you for spending time with me and talking about your show and what you're doing. It's pretty exciting. And I encourage all the audience to subscribe and listen to this podcast. And I think it's important that we recognize companies that are trying to affect social change and the things that they're doing. And those types of companies should be rewarded for doing that type of work. And so I'm excited to subscribe and listen as well. So any final thoughts before we wrap this up?
No, I just think now more than ever, I mean, I agree with you. I'll echo your words, promote ourselves by saying that, you know, now more than ever, we need positive stories and stories about people who are inspirational and making a difference in our communities. And so let's support them by listening to other stories. It's all free at Sea Change and In the Business of Change. So just go on and subscribe and you'll hear some positive stories.
And positive stories is good for mental health too.
Yes.
instead of the drudgery we hear on mainstream media, stay listening to podcasts, everyone. Of course, everyone listens to the show's podcasters, so they do. Alisa, thanks for coming on, and everyone check the show out. Thank you so much for being here.
Thanks so much for having me.
All right, so make sure you check out Alisa's show and get subscribed. Let us know what you think about it. Had a great interview with her. Appreciate her spending time with me. So, Mike, our question of the week. We need a little like drum roll thing.
Yeah, there we go. We'll have to talk to our production team on that. Anyway, yeah, I got this one off of one of the Facebook groups, and I thought it was a good one to answer here. I know you have a whole strategy, and I put mine in the notes here, but what would you recommend to back up your files for your podcast?
Oh, good one.
And I do it like this. I have offline backup discs, I call them, and I've got a couple of portable hard drives. I have one in the studio here with me, and it just backs up using Time Machine on the Mac. I'm sure there's a similar Windows app that'll do automatic backups like that. And then I have another one where I just go pick and choose stuff. And that one's in a different building. It's, you know, my studio is separate from my house. So I have that one stored in the house and I'll bring it out here, you know, maybe once every couple of weeks or once a week, something like that. And then just do a backup of all the media files that I've created and other things I want to save. And then I put that back in the house. So it's separate.
Right. So for me, as long as you're paying for your Blueberry account, you'll always have all your MP3 files you'll be able to get access to.
But some of you want to maybe save your WAV files. I personally don't save my WAV files. I just save the MP3.
Save the final.
Yeah, save the final. Now, that's your choice and whether you want to do that. And I do that just because after 1,600 episodes, that's a lot of storage. So I personally have a network-attached storage device. I have a Synology machine with 5 drives in it. And you can buy those NAS-type drives with 2 drives in it, so that basically if one drive goes bad, you still have a copy of the backup. You put another drive back in, and they sync back up, and you have a full backup. I also have external storage that I take home. So in other words, every once in a while, just like you, Mike, I kind of swap. I'll take the backup from here, and I'll take that to my house, and then I'll take the backup from the house and bring it here. Now, what's the delta there? Well, some of you can't do that. You can't take a hard drive to work. When I was in Hawaii, I actually had a safety deposit box where I put a couple backup hard drives in a safety deposit box. I've gotten so much storage now that that's really not practical. And another place to put stuff is simply in the cloud. You can use AWS Iceberg. There's a whole bunch of solutions out there to store stuff relatively inexpensive. I use Carbonite for my primary work machine.
Yeah, I have a Carbonite account as well for this machine. Yeah. And, you know, that's just very similar to that Time Machine thing, except for it goes up to the cloud and it does it when the computer's not busy, so it doesn't mess with your speed or anything.
So I have stuff in 3 different places, but still, it's not foolproof. You know, there could come a day where I miss something, but, you know, my main thing is pictures, videos, yeah, the audio. All that stuff gets backed up, and then you knock on wood and hope you. And do you need all the? Do I need the stuff from 2005? Probably no. Not.
I've never looked at anything past a couple of years at the most.
But you know, who knows what will come up? I did find an instance the other day where I, before Blueberry was offering podcast hosting, I had a media file stuck somewhere else that I had never migrated. I did migrate that, but.
Yeah, I'm missing the first 32 episodes of my main show So, because it was up on the cloud somewhere and I no longer have that account.
Yeah. So again, on your computer, on Time Machine or a backup to a hard drive or taking a hard drive off site, if you have the opportunity to do that, maybe keep a hard drive at work. Because here's the thing, a building burns down, you're going to lose more than your podcast files. So you got to have a place to put this stuff. And again, there's probably 100 different storage solutions out there. You do a Google search, you're going to find way more than you can chew. To be honest with you, you're probably going to be overwhelmed. But I personally like Carbonite for my main machine. It is a little expensive, but if I make a new file, it actively sends it right to the cloud right away. Mm-hmm. Nothing's perfect, but you know, and some of you use iCloud, you know, so that's okay too. If you're doing a,
I use that for photos mainly, is what I use iCloud for.
But I find it gets confusing because I've got 3 or 4 different Macs, and then stuff shows up on one Mac, I don't want it on the other. it's just a mess. But I'm kind of the outlier. Most people don't have more than a couple computers.
Right.
Or just one.
Yeah.
So what's next? I guess we're done, yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, yeah. Just if you have a question, you can click the leave a voicemail. And now it's in the show notes. I had to move it because it was causing other issues on our site. So in each of the show notes for the shows, there'll be a place if you want to click and record a voicemail. Or if you just want to record it on your regular podcast gear and send us a file, shoot a question to us in the Facebook group. Email mike@blueberry.com, whatever you want to get your question in here for the question of the week.
And we've been filling our Podcast Insider interviews pretty well recently. If you want to be on Podcast Insider and have your show highlighted, Todd, Mike, or Mackenzie at blueberry.com. We're happy to set up an interview with you and get you on the show. Also, we did get some submissions last week, Mike, from when we put out the word on do you want to be considered for our Podcaster of the Month program. So people were listening. And we did get some submissions that those submissions have been forwarded to Mackenzie. So, you know, if you want to be considered for Podcaster of the Month at blueberry.com, definitely Mackenzie is the person to send it to, Mackenzie@blueberry.com. If you send it to me, I'm going to forward it to her anyway.
Right.
So it'll just get
send
there.
Send it direct.
Yeah, send it direct to her. And make sure you put on there Podcaster of the Month in the subject. And that way she'll have it for consideration. So that's it. Again, if you want a free 30-day trial of Blueberry, and if you're thinking about podcasting, share our promo code INSIDER to get 30 days free. And again, if you're a podcaster and you're listening to this and you're not an affiliate with Blueberry, we're about ready to send out our Christmas checks, Mike.
Yes, I know.
So we have podcasters that have been affiliates for a few years, that are going to be getting 5-digit annual bonus checks as our affiliate. So some people aren't going to get that big of a bonus check.
No, but it's a nice little boost, you know.
It's a boost right before Christmas. And you basically, when you recommend Blueberry Podcasting and someone uses your promo code, you earn a bounty on that. Let's say they sign up for the $80 account. You earn an $80 bounty after that account is built twice. And then 80 times 12 or however many months they have been a customer that year, we add that to your grand total business that you brought us. And then we either pay you a 5 or 7% check at the end of the year for that business volume that you brought to us. And the beauty of that
it rolls year to year.
As long as that person stays a customer, you will continue to earn a bonus check on that single referral. So there's no other affiliate program in the podcasting space like it. Some of my team members cringe because I write a very significant amount of money that goes out of the checking account every year to reward our affiliates. But they brought us the business. We're going to reward them and continue to reward them for the life of those accounts as they're active. So if you're not an affiliate, go to the podcaster dashboard at blueberry.com and apply. And Mackenzie will get you set up with an affiliate account. You can start promoting Blueberry Podcasting on your show and earn money. Anyway, those bonus checks are coming. So look forward to them, those of you that are already active affiliates. Anything else, Mike?
Well, I'd like to thank our new editor, Gabe, over at Blueberry Pro. He's been doing a bang-up job the last couple of episodes. Like I said, if you need some help with production, you got to go to blueberrypro.com.
And they do an awesome job. You're getting ready to launch a new show or you wanted something to sustain your show. They really are. And basically, every Blueberry Pro customer gets in a team, gets assigned a 3-person team that works with you and helps you with your production of your show and everything. So it's really full service.
I'd like to say they make us sound smarter.
Yes, they do. Because I don't edit my other shows, and this show I sound fantastic. So, but anyway, thanks everyone for being here on Podcast Insider. Check out blueberrypro.com. Check out blueberry.com. Let us know what you think of the new website too. We've got lots of stuff happening over there. And the UI UX is coming, Mike.
Yep, I'm looking forward to it.
Man, we've spent a lot of time, I mean a lot of time, to bring you something that is going to be, well, it's going to blow the competition away. All right, everyone. Thank you so much for being here. We'll see you next week on Podcast Insider. Take care.
Bye-bye.